Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. It's so cold.
It's so cold that the diner's closed. The diner on Marshfield and Irving Park Road. It's always open. They burst their pipes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's a great one.
Well, and
I'll
then
save
they burst the pipes
later,
at Union Station and at Terminal 3. Okay, wait. It's so, Dan, how cold is it?
No, you've
ruined it. Oh, come on.
Also, it's filmy, so we get the hazardous driving conditions in addition to the cold. I mean, it's been a long week. All the spinouts.
How many? Like what? Six were there?
I counted
because that poor guy in the Buick that's on the left hand side of the road. I did call 911 for him. But yeah, it's ice. I mean, it's so. Why aren't there?
Did he not have a phone? Did you stop?
He looked like an old man, and old people don't normally have telephones. So he just looked like he was in shock, and he was sitting there on the left side.
Telephone?
Of the road. A phone.
Let's get the rotary dial out and call someone.
No, he didn't look like he had a cell phone. He looked shocked. His hands were still on the wheel.
They were out.
Back end was stuck along.
They were out this morning.
They were out early.
I didn't
see one.
Yep.
I didn't see one.
All the caravans were out early this morning, right around 3:35, 3:40. They were hitting the streets this morning.
So when's it going to heat up, Mike?
10 o'clock tomorrow morning. It should be about 35.
Mike, the reason she asked you is because most middle-aged women don't have apps that tell you what the weather is. So
I don't log on to that.
Carly Rae Jepsen over here. All right. Switching gears. Can't switch gears soon enough. The wall, Trump, Pelosi, Democrats, Republicans, cats and dogs living together in igloos in Lakeview. Trump and Pelosi sparring on the wall in advance of the State of the Union address yesterday. Pelosi being asked about wall funding as part of any ongoing negotiation, and here's what she had to say.
They're having a negotiation over in there. There's not going to be any wall money in the legislation. However, if they have some suggestions about certain localities where technology, some infrastructure, as I said, about the ports of entry, we might need more ports of entry. We might need some roads. That's part of the negotiation. It is not a negotiation for the president, say. It doesn't matter what Congress does. I knew he wanted it all to himself. I mean, oh, really? A president who wants to have Congress be completely irrelevant in how we meet the needs of the American people? No, come on.
Don't be ridiculous. Congress to be completely irrelevant, that's ridiculous. Are we interested in negotiating with the president? No. But we're still relevant because I'm an appropriator, said Nancy Pelosi. But the important thing, of course, the first thing she said, there's going to be no border wall funding. But then the flip side was her contingent, part of her negotiating team, Nita Lowey from New York and Lucille Robel Ayard from California, they presented to the press, too, and they seemed to indicate some willingness to do something resembling a barrier. Part of it, I suppose, was the Normandy fencing.
Yeah, that's what...
That was later reported.
And that's in the, the desolate areas along the border. They're still up. They've been up there for a long time. But, yeah, that's a part where there's 10 specific parts along the border that they want a more fortified wall.
And President Trump responded to what he was hearing from the Democrats saying this.
No, because if there's no wall, it doesn't work. She's just playing games. So if there's no wall, it doesn't work. And we're building the wall right now. I mean, a lot of people don't know that, but we have a lot of wall under construction. We've given out a lot of contracts over the last 3-4 weeks, good contracts. A lot of wall is soon going to be under construction. We're finishing up design on certain areas, the most important areas, the Rio Grande area and others. We are building a lot of wall. You know, I'm not waiting for this committee. And I've told a lot of people, I don't expect much coming out of the committee because I keep hearing the words that we'll give you what you want, but we're not going to give you a wall. And the problem is, if they don't give us a wall, it doesn't work. Without a wall, it doesn't work.
And by the way, he's back to using wall. He's tired of barriers and fencing and the other synonyms for the wall with respect to this debate. So he's just saying it straight away. He can't get away, though, is to say, oh, it's already done. We're doing it anyway. What they do doesn't matter, because if what they do doesn't matter, then why have we been going through these machinations for the last 60 days? So it does matter. He's got to get some funding or find some funding to do more than is already underway.
But it was funny. He took Nancy Pelosi to task because, you know, obviously she's from California. Well, what if they took down the wall, Nancy, between Tijuana and San Diego? She'd be begging for it back then.
No, because if there's no wall, it doesn't work. She's just playing games. If you go to Tijuana and you take down that wall, you will have so many people coming into our country that Nancy Pelosi will be begging for a wall. She'll be begging for a wall. She will say, Mr. President, please, please give us a wall.
And to his point, here's the actual data. 46 miles of reinforced fencing along the San Diego sector of the border. Before construction began on that reinforced fencing in 1986, there were 629,656 arrests.
Wow.
In 2016, there were 31,891 arrests. Walls don't matter? Barriers don't matter? Yeah, they do. And they make it easier, obviously, for Border Patrol to do their job. That's Trump's point, and he's precisely right. He's also suggested, and was suggested earlier this week, that Republicans have begrudgingly given him the green light to use his emergency powers, to back the play to use his emergency powers, if Pelosi and the Democrats won't budge on any sort of compromise funding. So it doesn't look like we're going to get a deal at this juncture, but between now and the State of the Union address on Tuesday night. And so this is, I think, incumbent upon President Trump to restate the case on Tuesday night if there is no deal.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy talking about immigration, border security against the backdrop of Tuesday's State of the Union address. Some other events that have happened that further buttress President Trump's case. Did you see this? Customs officers make the largest fentanyl seizure ever at Arizona border crossing. 254 pounds of fentanyl hidden inside an 18-wheeler carrying cucumbers during a secondary inspection at the Mariposa port of entry this past Saturday. So again, in terms of the drugs entering this country, because of the gaps in border security. Additionally, Saturday, U.S. Border Patrol agents arrested a Salvadoran man crossing illegally into the country from Mexico. Agents identified him as an MS-13 gang member. So, yes, violent gang members that do come to this country. Small percentage, yes, small percentage, big number, big problem. Agents caught on Monday a cluster of illegal immigrants shortly after they crossed into the U.S. checks on the records reveal one of them, a Guatemalan, was previously convicted for attempted second-degree murder in New York. He had been sentenced to 5 years. And so think about those instances against the backdrop of another caravan moving to the southern border. Griff Jenkins over at Fox, embedded with the caravan, had this report.
So what they're going to do is they're going to take a subway ride to another station where buses provided by Mexico City's government for free will now drive them 2.5 hours north to the town of Querétaro, where they will continue their traditional journey towards the U.S. border to towns like Tijuana. Now, you mentioned, Ainsley, that reversal. It's quite a significant reversal on the new Mexican president's administration that wanted to be very open opened arms and welcoming two immigrants, offering this fast-track temporary asylum for 1 year, giving them a chance to work as they work their way towards likely the United States, their final destination. Well, they've stopped that. They're not offering that anymore. They capped it at 12,600. Those people will be able to get their card and their approval, but no more. And that's going to create a problem down on the Guatemala-Mexico southern border, as there are thousands already on the way in additional caravans. And we know in February 16th, yet another caravan will begin in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, where this caravan that we've been covering for the last several weeks began. So it is on the march, and as you see.
Yeah. So one caravan after the other. And yes, it's a humanitarian crisis on the border, but not solely a humanitarian crisis. Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you know what I got? Yeah, I got 3 points, Dan. One is, why don't Disney use the Army Corps of Engineer money? They have billions and billions of dollars that they, I don't know what they do with it. And two is, why don't they go after the organizers? I never hear anything about that. And three, why don't they ask Pelosi and Schumer and all of the liberal, good-hearted Democrats, how many do you want in this country? Is it a billion, million, everybody? Just ask them that. And then the fourth point is, do you want them in your district? Just ask them that. They're always asking, do you want funding for the wall? Are you going to fund the wall? Those questions have been answered, and they're not going to do it. So just go with a different ball game. Have a nice day.
Well, thanks, he'd have to declare a national emergency to take funds from the Army Corps of Engineers, correct?
To finance their work.
He should just do that. Get this over with. Just do it, because they're not going to budge on border funding or wall funding. They won't.
Or you can continue to exploit them on the topic. That's a possibility as well. One other thing with respect to what Ed said. How about taking a page out of Obrador's book, South of the Border? Oh, free bus trips to Mexico City? Okay. The caravan? Let's line up the buses. Free bus trips to Pelosi's San Francisco district. Free bus trips to Schumer's New York district.
They could camp out in front of their house, too.
Free buses to El Gallito / Chewy's district here in the city. What do you think? I like that idea a lot. Mike in Plano.
Hey, Dan, I want to get your opinion on eminent domain. It's something that hasn't been talked about on either side. Now, I'm not a fan of government seizing private property at all, but at the same time, if you're a landowner that owns land along the border, you are along an international boundary line, and I do believe a sovereign nation state has a right to secure its own border. So I understand the argument on both sides, especially from conservative libertarian types, but I want to get your opinion on that.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I mean, the Fifth Amendment provides for it, eminent domain with just compensation. I don't know what's required or how much land seizure would be required to do what has been proposed by experts in the space, including Border Patrol. I don't know, but, I mean, it is provided for in the Constitution.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The case of the alleged attack on Empire star Justin Smollett, Jussie Smollett. President Trump was asked about it during a discussion about the larger issues of the day, like the impasse over border security. And this is what he had to say about this, what has become an international story.
The Chicago situation, the actor from Empire who was allegedly attacked with racist and homophobic.
That I can tell you is horrible. I've seen it last night. I think that's horrible. It doesn't get worse as far as I'm concerned.
Perfect. President Trump playing it, you know, fact-based. They are investigating an incident. He didn't, you know, over-exaggerate. He kept calm and cool, and I thought that was a perfect answer to that question. But there are lots of questions that need to be answered. And yesterday we learned from a source late in the afternoon that they're not playing ball. Jussie and his manager, whose name is Brandon something, they asked them for their phone records or for their cell phones, and they have refused. So now I've been told that they're trying to get a subpoena to get their phone records, to find out, because they can find out where they were, if they were talking to each other, phone calls that were made. And they also are seeking a warrant to search Jussie's apartment to see if there's any items in there that may coincide with items that were allegedly around his neck.
So the reason the cell phones are important, just to refresh, is because Smollett was allegedly talking to his manager when the attack occurred. His manager says he heard a racial epithet uttered at Jussie while they were on the phone. And so they want to confirm that conversation was ongoing at the approximate time the attack occurred, the alleged attack occurred. The other issue yesterday, two silhouettes, pictures of a video snapshot of two silhouettes.
In the night.
Yes. And
how many tips has that garnered? Zero. Not one person called the detectives division except for this one person that they talked to on the street. But once they put that surveillance shot up, nothing.
Interesting point that CWB Chicago raised. Consideration regarding the potential persons of interest, those two silhouettes being sought by police in connection with the reported hate crime incident in Streeterville. The men are walking away from the attack scene 15 to 30 minutes before the incident per the police's timing of the events. So, perhaps there's no more information or tips about those two because, as some suspected, they really had nothing to do with it, were nowhere in the vicinity of the attack when it occurred, by definition, not the responsible party.
Yeah, and then you look at Second City Blog, and they wrote something. They said that they were, this shot that they put up, the bosses want to look like they're doing something to appease Mayor Emanuel and the Hollywood money people. Empire is losing money and viewers, so it's all hands on blank deck. But they used a different word. But they said it like it is. It's the second coldest night of the year. A Hollywood actor bundled up against minus 20 degree wind chill was recognized by two quote-unquote fans at 2 in the morning on Lower Water Street. I mean, none of this is making sense.
Right, because it was, aren't you that guy, but pejoratives for that guy, from Empire. That's what the alleged attackers allegedly said. Now, TMZ has located a witness of sorts, a woman who lives in Smollett's apartment building, told cops she saw a suspicious man who she said looked like a redneck.
Oh, my gosh.
Loitering just outside the entrance to the building an hour and a half before Jussie says he was attacked. Women would not authorize the release of her name. She said she walked out of the building at 12:30 a.m. on Tuesday to take her dogs out and saw a man near the door pacing between the parking garage and the entrance looking agitated and smoking a cigarette. She says he looked out of place. He was a white man with scruff on his face, wearing a blue winter beanie, a blue zip-up wet sweatshirt with a hood and blue jeans that were too short, exposing thick gray hunting socks with camel-colored dress shoes, she says. She also says she noticed what looked like a rope or clothesline protruding from the bottom of his sweatshirt made of white and blue material. She additionally says she was staring at another, that he, this person that she just, that I just yeah. described her describing.
This redneck. Yeah.
She says he was staring at another man about 300 feet away who was standing near another entrance to the building. She says she got creeped out by the man, and after 5 minutes, she retreated back into the building. Then she was, woke up at 4 a.m. to go to the gym, noticed a lot of security, and the concierge told her that Jussie had been attacked. When she told the concierge what she had seen, the concierge implored her to call Chicago police, which
she has not called Chicago police. So they would like to hear from her.
She made contact that afternoon, according to this TMZ report. There's something interesting about that, this unnamed eyewitness. That is a lot of detail this individual loitering by her building, she says.
Oh, I'm getting a text.
And, a lot of detail.
And, you know, that building has security, so that didn't show up on the surveillance video?
Well, right. These two individuals, as far as we know, haven't shown up on any security video in the vicinity. And so perhaps they exist, and perhaps they move in the shadows. And so aren't picked up on any of the video that's in the area? I mean, remember, you're talking about Streeterville, so you're talking about a lot of condo buildings, rental buildings that have security cameras. You've got businesses with security cameras, restaurants, retail shops. It's hard to walk around, it would seem to me. I haven't done a survey of my neighborhood, but it is my neighborhood. It would be hard to walk around that neighborhood and not be picked up on any security footage.
And another point of contention that I have is we have 20 detectives working on this. Detectives that should be working on carjackings in other neighborhoods, homicides that are unsolved in the city. And instead, we're wasting our energy on this guy, which his story, I think, is falling apart. Because I'll tell you one thing, Dan, if I was attacked, I would give police my cell phone. Whatever you need. I will help you in any shape, way, or form possible. And that's not what's happening between him and his manager, whose name is Brandon Moore, by the way.
Yeah,
lives in the same building as Jesse.
The lack of cooperation is interesting. Now, you could say, well, look, they don't trust the police. There was a report after the incident that Smollett was reticent to file a police report at all. So they don't trust police, so that's not why they're just going to turn over their phones that have obviously a lot of other information besides a memorialization of their conversation. That could be a position. But the flip side of that is to say, as you're sort of implying, well, you're the ones who call police. So want to facilitate their solving of this hate crime, quote unquote hate crime? Because I don't like that phrase because every crime is a hate crime. Do you want them to find the people responsible for the attack you said occurred or not? So isn't there a way to help them in their investigation while preserving whatever privacy you're concerned about preserving, if that's the issue?
Right. And, you know, and then the family released a statement yesterday, and Access Hollywood was just so moved.
Early hours of Tuesday morning, our beloved son and brother, Jesse, was the victim of a violent and unprovoked attack. We want to be clear, this was a racial and homophobic hate crime. Jesse has told the police everything from the very beginning. His story has never changed, and we are hopeful they will find these men and bring them to justice. Our family thanks everyone for their prayers and the huge amount of love he has received.
Yeah.
And they also went on to say, you know, we're so grateful that God saw him through this cowardly attack alive. Jesse is a warrior whose light cannot be dimmed. I mean, they're acting like he's been very forthright with police, and he has changed his story because he told TMZ something different. Then the cops went back and said, did they really say this is MAGA country?
Right.
And that's when he said, oh, yes, I forgot to mention that.
Well, you would expect the family to believe their family member, number one.
Okay.
So, fine.
Right, fine. I'm a bad mom.
But factually, his story has changed. Yeah. Factually, his story has changed. So I understand the family rallying to, you know, their son, brother. What they're saying, that part of it just isn't true.
And what's also not true, then you have NBC reporter Ashar Kasari. I'm sorry, I just completely butchered his name. He was on Access Hollywood, which is, you know, syndicated nationwide, spreading some lies.
Well, the police confirmed there is video that shows part of Jesse's journey to and from the Subway restaurant he went to, and that there is video of him with rope draped around his neck like a noose as he walked through his building's lobby. Natalie Kitten Scott, I have also learned Jesse appeared to be acting normally in the footage. He's not seen approaching security.
So he walked, it wasn't a noose, it was a clothesline, and it was loose around his neck, tied up like a tie. And again, though, he did say he didn't walk up to a security guard. He just walked straight up.
Well, I mean, the story is either going to start being corroborated or it's not. Remember, another part of the alleged incident was being splashed with some chemical. So will his clothes that police, I understand, are testing, will his clothes show traces of bleach or some other chemical that would otherwise not be on his clothes? So that's something else that could corroborate or undermine his story. We just don't know yet.
But in the meantime, look at this. His show sold out. He's going to California, West Hollywood, and after this attack happened, sold out within hours.
So
they have that rally for him on Saturday, which we're going to be bringing you the audio on Monday of.
So potentially a couple of rednecks were hanging outside his condo building,
which they don't have footage of.
And they're they're avid Empire watchers, so they knew who Jussie Smollett was. Yeah, I'm going to reserve judgment, but I think there are a lot of unanswered questions in this case. In terms of the police resources, look, this case should be investigated.
Right.
Clearly. But does it take 20 detectives?
Just grab one, sit in a room with them, say like, hey, come clean. Because I believe something happened to him, obviously, because he has a laceration on his face and some bruises. And I don't know if he really has a cracked rib. I haven't heard more about that. But just come clean. Now's your time.
How many detectives were assigned to say, and I don't know the answer, I'm just curious, assigned to solve the Hadiyah Pendleton murder? How many detectives were assigned to solve the 85% of murders in the city of Chicago that go unsolved?
Not 20. Maybe one. So, if you're lucky, two or three.
So is this an instance where there's a different level of justice for a celebrity versus just your rank and file Chicagoan, minority or otherwise? Just a note here.
It's ridiculous.
The police response that a celebrity gets versus the police response somebody else with the same fact pattern would have gotten. Or worse, you know, like they were murdered. You know, like they were a kid who was murdered. You know, like they were a kid who was murdered and wasn't doing anything wrong. Mike in Union, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. I'm not going to pass judgment either to Amy's point with the 20 detectives. I'm going to make a prediction that because of these Hollywood elites, Eric Holder will be in charge of a commission to find out what really happened when people who maybe are being assaulted more get no attention. So sort of bring that up.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
And now the producers have given him a 24-hour armed security guard.
I think they've expanded security for the whole cast. Yeah, right. Philip in Blue Island.
I mean, this is a homophobic, racist country. So the fact that you and Amy have come to all these determinations and analyzations that are negative towards Jussie, it's kind of proof.
There's no
said the
video. There's no video
gonna,
of the attack.
You said the family's going to believe them, right? And I think that we all are a family. Why don't you believe them?
You know why I don't believe them? Because I was on the street for 18 years and I smell a rat. This did not happen.
Philip,
the way he said it.
Oh, it didn't happen?
Philip, I'm asking.
Attacked, but not by two guys yelling, this is MAGA country.
Philip.
Oh, you don't believe that? Oh, just because of that. Go ahead, sir.
I'm asking questions. So I don't know why you can't ask questions about the particulars of a case, number one. Number two,
right.
In the same breath, you said we're a racist and homophobic country and we're all family.
Right. Right.
Yeah, no, there's nothing contradictory
right.
about
so what's
that.
What's funny about that? I mean, because there is the element
your
of this
hypocrisy
that's running around
that's
talking
funny.
About that's running around doing racist stuff under the MAGA banner. So why act like that's not a part of this story? Why act like
I'm interested in this incident. You're interested in social commentary.
No, no, no,
what
no,
about
don't
what about what about what,
judgment.
What about this incident? Your judgment. I'm commenting on the words that you used. What about the incident?
That's fine. And I'm commenting on the words that you used. The fact
great
that
comeback.
This incident, I said initially, I said we need more facts. And now that more facts are coming out slowly, not fast enough for those who are just negative towards people that are not like them. Especially when it comes to this show, it's incumbent.
Right.
I know. You got to run from it, and you're gonna talk bad about me.
No, I'll talk bad about you right now. You're full of crap.
Okay, come on.
See you later, Phil.
You've made the switch. And it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The Democrat Socialist Party is the party of infanticide. That's not me doing it or even saying it. That's the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, former pediatric neurologist.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And a member of, well, a couple members of the Virginia's House of Delegates, but the sponsor of particular legislation to remove any impediments from killing a child that was born alive. Her name is Kathy Tran. Here's her back and forth on the floor of the House of Delegates discussing the implications of her legislation.
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs of that she is about to give birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would
I understand
make
that.
At that.
I'm
point.
Asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Ew.
Ralph Northam, yeah. The governor, was asked about Representative Tran's bill, Delegate Tran's bill, on a local radio show. Here's what he had to say.
So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
So these are healthy babies that are born, and they're keeping the baby comfortable while the mom decides whether or not she wants to kill it?
Not necessarily healthy, but...
But I'm just trying to wrap my head
around
this.
No, not necessarily healthy. Has a disability. Men, of course, shouldn't be. All of the platitudes
that
Democrats use, men shouldn't be involved.
Men shouldn't tell women what they could do with their bodies.
Should men be involved in the raising of the children then, or no? The government's got that too, I suppose. Government shouldn't be involved.
Men do father children, I always tell my friends.
Government shouldn't be involved, woman's body, all of the anodyne arguments to obfuscate the gruesome reality that you're talking about infanticide. Currently, Virginia law requires three physicians to agree that a third trimester abortion is necessary because the mother's life or health would be jeopardized. And the or health is always the exception that basically blows the door wide open. The Repeal Act, Representative Delegate Tran's Repeal Act, would have only required the mother and the physician be in agreement. So the mother's demanding it, and the physician, her physician would agree, disagree. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Northam is commenting on. Mike Pence has responded to this in writing, Vice President.
He wrote a nice op-ed.
In shocking testimony, the delegate admitted that even when it was obvious the child was about to be born, in the 40th week of pregnancy, even in the midst of active labor, the proposed law would allow for the child to be aborted so long as a single doctor approves. He makes mention, as the vice president, of the celebration a little bit north last week in New York, lighting up One World Trade Center in celebration for abortion on demand right up until birth. At the base of the same One World Trade Center that was bathed in pink last week to mark the passage of New York's law is the September 11th memorial. There, the names of all who died in the horrific terrorist attack 18 years ago are etched in stone, including the 11 unborn children we lost along with their expectant mothers. Did you know that? Our commitment to the inalienable right to life is as sure as the stone in which those names are etched, and our administration and our movement we'll continue to fight until our nation once again recognizes and celebrates the sanctity of all human life. You want to tell me again how the left is in the business of safe, legal, and rare? Does anybody believe that? Anybody? You want to tell me again about the left's humanity? No, I want to hear from somebody. I know I won't, because people don't like to be exposed as the ghouls they are, or they don't like to have to follow the implications of the positions they're taking. They just want to continue navel-gazing and repeating the same tired sophistry that you heard from Governor Northam. You think this is new? Or has this always been where this goes? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. You familiar with Peter Singer? Peter Singer is a bioethics professor at Princeton. And he is the best example, most on-example of where utilitarianism goes, which is what, by the way, the left propagates, and many on the center-right fall prey to it. The most amount of happiness for the most amount of people. That's the mind's eye through which all decisions should be made, right? Is it? Here's Peter Singer on the topic. When the death of a disabled infant will lead to the birth of another infant with better prospects of a happy life, the total amount of happiness will be greater if the disabled infant is killed. The loss of the happy life for the first infant is outweighed by the gain of a happier life for the second. Therefore, if killing the hemophilic infant has no adverse effect on others, it would, according to the total view, be right to kill him. Welcome to Philosophy 101. College campuses everywhere, and it's been like that for 30 years, unbeknownst to most everybody. I remember because I was exposed to it at Northwestern, great institution of higher learning. Yeah. Peter Singer, by the way, you think this is the end? And because now you've got Virginia politicians trying to do damage control, one of the co-sponsors has apologized. Dawn Adams, delegate Democrat from Richmond, she made a mistake. She didn't read Kathy Tran's bill that would allow abortion in the third trimester, so now she's off it because of the firestorm. You think they won't come back here? They're coming back, and they're not stopping there. Peter Singer, 1993. You know, these ideas have a basis somewhere. It's not just one loony left delegate in Virginia that comes up with this out of whole cloth. In 1993, Peter Singer suggested that no newborn should be considered a person until 30 days after birth. And that attending physicians should kill some disabled babies on the spot. 5 years later, he was appointed to the post he holds at Princeton University. Isn't it great? In 1979, Peter Singer, quote, human babies are not born self-aware or capable of grasping that they exist over time. They are not persons. The life of a newborn is of less value than the life of a pig, a dog, or chimpanzee, unquote. Quote, the life of a newborn is of less value than the life of a pig, a dog, or a chimpanzee, unquote. You think Peter Singer's alone in that belief? He's utilitarian, just like those politicians we like to support here. The nice thing about Singer, though, is he's honest where the politicians who pretend to have humanity, be concerned about every human being's dignity, are dishonest. And, of course, people buy the dishonesty. Here, Singer rejects birth as a relevant dividing line between person and non-person. He agrees with pro-life advocates that there is no ontologically significant difference between the fetus and a newborn. Thank you, Peter Singer. And then he goes on to take the position of the pro-abortion left to its logical conclusion. The liberals, quoting Singer, the liberal search for a morally crucial dividing line between the newborn baby and the fetus has failed to yield any event or stage of development that can bear the weight of separating those with a right to life from those who lack such a right. So a baby born with Down syndrome in Virginia under this legislation, mom says, I took the chance that the baby wouldn't be born with Down syndrome. He has been born with Down syndrome. Doctor, kill him. And if the doctor agreed, that baby would be killed under this proposal in Virginia. And here's the Peter Singer piece of it, which you should share, is the philosophical underpinning of the pro-abort left for the last 4 decades. And obviously, though many who are pro-lifers know, Planned Parenthood, founded by Margaret Sanger, eugenicist, ghoul, Hitlerian. It's all about somebody else, other human beings' existence is predicated on somebody else's happiness. That's utilitarianism, taken to its logical extreme. Thank you, Peter Singer, bioethics professor, for helping us get there. Remember Frank Stevens? I made fun of Ashton Kutcher yesterday.
Yeah.
I want to thank him today, ironically. Ashton Kutcher happened upon this video of Frank Stevens' testimony before a congressional committee a couple of years ago, imploring Congress to continue funding research for persons with Down syndrome, you know, research into the disease, but also making the case that people with Down syndrome are people.
Right.
Since that's been lost in the culture of death that permeates the Western world, if somebody has a disability, kill them. Which some people believe and act in accordance with. Kutcher posted Frank Stevens's incredible testimony on his Facebook page. And, you know, it turns out Ashton Kutcher is sort of popular. So it got around fast.
Good.
So good for him. Frank Stevens, though. Think about Frank Stevens when you're thinking about and what he has to say, which we'll play again here momentarily, and what he has to say, or think about him, his testimony, in the context of what has been proposed in Virginia, what has been enacted in New York, what is being said by Governor Spaulding here in Illinois, that he wants Illinois to be the most pro-abortion state in the country. That's what he's saying. He uses euphemisms. I'm just laying it straight. Now, of course, Bruce Rauner already beat him to the punch. But I guess he could take the Peter Singer approach and say, you know, until you can work outside the home, as long as you're eligible to stay on your parents' insurance, they can take you out if you become a source of unhappiness. How about that?
They won't move out of the basement. They won't get off their gaming devices. Doctor!
Frank Stevens, who's a Special Olympian and a gentleman with Down syndrome, testifying before Congress.
I don't feel I should have to justify my existence. But to those who question the value of people with Down syndrome, I would make 3 points. First, we are a medical gift to society, a blueprint for medical research into cancer, Alzheimer's, and immune system disorders. Second, we are an unusually powerful source of happiness. A Harvard-based study has discovered that people with Down syndrome, as well as their parents and siblings, are happier than society at large. Surely happiness is worth something. Finally, we are the canary in the eugenics coal mine. We are giving the world a chance to think about the ethics of choosing which humans get a chance at life. So we are helping to defeat cancer and Alzheimer's, and we make the world a happier place. Is there really no place for us in the world?
And how smart is Frank Stevens? Uses the utilitarian awesome. Argument right against him. Jiu-jitsu yeah. move. I love it. So, you know, for the shame culture in which we live and all your virtue signaling neighbors and those in your social circles, let them know that voting for Democrats, particularly in places like Illinois or Virginia or New York or California, is voting for infanticide and nothing short of it. Do you have the guts to do that? It's the truth. You have the guts to tell the truth? Tony on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy Lamb. This is genocide. And here's one thing I wanted to point out that gets lost on these people that are interviewing these knuckleheads. Is it a fact that the liberal left says that abortion is part of a woman's reproductive rights? So let me ask this question. Once the baby is born out of the womb, how does that impact the reproductive rights? I don't get this. This is ridiculous. Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Tony. Chris in Waukegan.
Yeah, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. All this reflects the eventual end game of where liberalism leads, and that's Nazi Germany. They had a policy before they actually started actively killing Jewish people and gypsies in the concentration camps. It was a philosophy called life unworthy of life, where they would euthanize mentally ill people in special institutions in Nazi Germany. Left-wing thought always travels down this very scary path. And listen to this. The three groups of people that were most influenced by Nazi thought before the Nazis took over were the journalists, the educators, and the entertainers. Isn't it funny how or history repeats itself? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. Megan in Evanston.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great show. Just 3 points. Number one, where's the Catholic Church? Why aren't they not speaking out on that? Number two, of course men are for this because they abdicate the responsibility of being a father. And four, it's all about power. Thanks, you guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Megan. Tom in Blue Island.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Been waiting for this one. On the file of You Can't Make This Stuff Up, the same day this lady, Kathy Tran, who's a mother of four, proposes, she proposed a bill to protect a caterpillar. Incredible stuff. And to the Annie mothers out there with their war faces on, screaming, my body, my choice, you've been given the most important job in the history of mankind, and you're mucking it up. Have a good day, you guys.
Not Amy. Thanks, Tom.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Today's the day. Today is the day that Bear Man, Don Bear Man Walker from Plainfield, finds out if he is headed to immortality. Canton, Ohio, NFL
Hall
of Fame. It's incredible. Well, Hall of Fame and the Hall of Fans within the Hall of Fame, but the Hall of Fame.
That's a huge honor. And anybody who's ever watched a Bears game or if you've had season tickets, you know who this guy is. He's the one, he sits in the end zone seats, and he's got a real bear on top of his head and just an elaborate outfit. But he's so dedicated, and he's so good at what he does, and I'm pulling for him.
He's one of three finalists. He's up against... He's up against a high school teacher from Beaver, Pennsylvania. Steelers season ticket holder for 18 years.
What's his name? Loser. Just kidding.
His name is Rick Holman. And a Dolphins fan named Roger Avila, Miami. He goes by Dolphin Maniac. He's held his seats for 24 years.
That's
so just
awesome.
In terms of longevity of season ticket holding,
yeah,
the Bear Man has both of them beat.
How many years?
Almost combined. He goes back to 85.
Nice.
That's 33 years. For more on this, let's get a sense of the nerves as he's waiting for the knock on the door, the call from Roger Goodell. We're pleased to be joined by Don Bearman Walker. Don, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dad and Amy, for having me on.
That's
my signature growl.
That's how you know it's him. That's we're not putting you on. That only Don could do that. So, Don, how are you feeling today? Nervous?
Oh, you bet. You bet, guys. Yeah, I didn't sleep too well last night. Just a lot of anticipation here. The next 2 hours, I'm going to know it. I'm going to know whether I made it. I mean, I got a good feeling, but still, there's always a little bit of nervousness.
Was there a question and answer portion to this? Did they sit you down and ask you about, you know, how you've evolved into this Bear fan?
Oh yeah, they came to my house in Plainfield in early December, did a full film interview and you know, a lot of questions and so forth. So yeah, I mean, then I had to send in like a video and so forth. But the Bears are the ones that kind of nominated me back in October to Ford for them when Ford went to the Bears and asked, you know, give us a couple ultimate fans you have for this new, you know, Ford Hall of Fans contest. And I definitely was, you know, the first one on the list. So, yeah, that's it's a very thorough process.
Was there a Wonderlook testing or any other psychological testing that you had to go through?
Well, thank God there was.
So explain your...
Even though, I mean, I do. I have a bachelor's and a master's degree, so forestry. So
yeah.
I think I might be able to do pretty well in that.
And how much of your annual income now goes to your season tickets for the Bears?
Well, it's not just season tickets. Yeah, I think I spend between, you know, $5,000 to $8,000. I also collect Bears memorabilia. I've been doing that for the last 20 years, so... that also. So.
Well, how did you become a Bears fan? Did you grow up in Plainfield or in Chicago?
Well, the Chicago region, yeah. I grew up in Lake County, Indiana, actually, so only 45 miles from, you know, downtown, so straight south. So, you know, and basically all the media was Bears. You know, there was nothing else, so that naturally I became a Bears fan. So
Me and my older brother really got into them. Wait a second. What? A Hoosier is going to go in as the Bear man?
No. How long have you lived in Plainfield?
Since 2002. So.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've been, you know, I lived in, before that I was in Countryside for about 6 years. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, the Indiana area is, it's heavily northwest
of course,
Bear fans.
Of course, of course. Now, why number 46, Doug Plank, as the jersey of choice? Why not say a Bob Avellini, a Matt Sui?
Well, I was always big in the defense side of the Bears. And Bears, you know, even the 70s, early 70s, they were not a good team. And I don't know if you know that the offense was terrible, unfortunately. But the defense still, you know, teams always said when they came in and played the Bears, I mean, they felt it for the next couple days, how bad, you know, how hard-hitting that. And Doug just epitomized that defense. You know, he was 12th-round draft pick. He made the team as a rookie. He started as a rookie. He set a rookie record for tackles for the Bears that Brian Urlacher, he only beat by two, so as in his rookie season. So Doug just was just a ferocious hitter. He had intensity. He had heart. He was all about how hard he could hit you, you know, never leaving anybody standing after the play. He just really stood out for me.
He wouldn't even be allowed.
Known as a dirty hitter. Yeah. Also, you know, he was called a hitman. With him and Gary Fenzik, were called a hitman.
He wouldn't even be allowed on the field today in the no tackle NFL.
Right. Yeah. No. He kind of admits a lot of the stuff he did. Definitely would get a flag. So I don't. You know, he said he probably couldn't play too well today's rules.
So, Don, how did you come up with that outfit? And are there ever days where it's hard? I mean, you put the paint on your face. You got, because I've seen you out there, and when it's 100 degrees out on the field, then I've also seen you when it's, you know, 30 below.
Right, right. Well, maybe coming up with the outfit, I always wanted to do something more extravagant through the years, you know. I did face paint and a helmet, you know, for some years, then a face paint with colored wigs. You know, punk wigs, blue or orange. Then I really love the Bear logo, the growling Bear logo. And I actually seen a fan, this is like in 95, 96, I seen a fan in the section over from me. I was in section 36 in Old Soldier Field, who actually was wearing like a bear skin rug over himself. And he really didn't have anything to go with it. But I said, that's interesting. And, you know, I actually went to a costume shop trying to see if they had a growling bear, a menacing bear I could wear over my head. And all they had was the cutesy bears that were smiling. And that didn't work at all. You know, that didn't appeal to me. So I went to a taxidermist in Palatine, and, you know, I called them up. They said, yeah, we got a small black bear, you know, what they call bearskin rug. And I went there and looked at it and got a good price for it. But I was too embarrassed to tell the taxidermist, you know, hey, you think I could cut the head off and wear it on my head? I just bought it. And a friend of mine, the head is mounted on plywood, so we cut the wood off and scooped out the styrofoam, and I put a strap on it. And by God, it worked. And then and I debuted it in November of 96 season. I just went from there. I gradually added to fur, you know, fake fur and shoulder pads and claws and feet,
claws,
you know,
the
feet
best.
Claws. So yeah, as far as this costume works very well. Maybe not in maybe 21 below, but like we had here, but works very well. December, November are my favorite months, you know, in the 40s and 50 degrees, 30s. But September, I can have a little bit of problems there, you know, as far as keeping hydrated. It's a bear to wear.
Hey!
Now, all of those bear parts, none of those are from conflict bears. Those are all street legal, I presume.
Right.
Yeah, okay, all right, good. I just don't want any legal problems. All right, so how does the selection happen today? I mean, how are they tabulating the votes? Is this just like Roger Goodell picking a name out of a hat? How does it work?
Well, no, actually, this process was a three-part process where the voting, you know, which went through a whole month here, ended last Sunday, you know, as far as people voting for you. That was one-third of what they call the scoring system for this. So whoever got the most votes was, you know, 1 through 10 got, you know, let's say a 10. And then one-third of the – I'm basically judged one-third by a panel from Ford, what they call my – quote, ultimate fandom, you know, not sure exactly.
The ultimate fandom
is,
quotient.
I'm scaled
yes.
1 through 10 by a panel from Ford. Then I'm also scaled 1 through 10 by a panel from the Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame. And then, the last 1 through 10 is the vote. So they add all that up, and whoever has the highest score is going to be the winner. And, again, David Baker is going to be knocking, hopefully, on my door here in the next you know, hour and a half with a film crew and give me the great news. So,
well, you're dressed and ready to go, right?
Well, actually, they told me if you get this, I'm a little bit disappointed not to wear the bear costume. I guess we have to go to a Hall of Fame luncheon here with the suit and tie up there right after this here at 11 o'clock. So I'll be wearing you know a jersey and you know and jeans, but. Bear stuff, but unfortunately, no bear man today being filmed.
Now, if you don't have to tell me, you don't have to answer this question. If you feel it might implicate you, you can certainly invoke your Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. But with respect to the voting, did you enlist some of the machine potentates in Chicago to help you with the voting portion of the process?
Maybe, I don't know. Some of my friends said, yeah, it's Chicago way. They would post on my Facebook, let's vote early, but what often? So,
how did you
do that? I actually had a campaign manager for this, Timmy from the Bus, he's called. He's a famous tailgater here in Chicago, and he helped tremendously with videos of me.
He's very good.
And also, you know, we reached out to probably 50 Bear Facebook fan clubs, you know, across the nation.
Yeah,
you have to. Because I'm looking at your competition right now, and I think you've got this locked in.
I mean, thank you very much. I mean, I've been getting, you know, that from a lot of people. They're kind of swelling my head, but I'm constantly getting, you know, you got this. I guess because, you know, a big thing is because they show me as Bear Man, and where the other two guys, you know, the Dolphin guy does have a costume, but he's just not really presented that way.
Yeah, they're just
about the presentation.
They're just civilians. They're just civilians. I mean, you've been on the field. You've carried the Bear Nation flag.
Right.
I mean,
it's
a no-brainer.
I would like to say I am the most well-known of these three across the country, you know.
So
just from the TV appearances, and you know, Sunday Night Football, the exposure I'm getting. So I've been doing this for 22 years. Also, you know.
Yeah. Look, you put in your time, and I'm sure it's a lonely existence. Here's the question: is Doug Plank going to give your introduction when you're inducted into the Hall of Fame? Have you asked?
We don't know what Ford hasn't been saying any plans, but I think I got a good feeling because I've been, you know, in contact with him. He made promotional videos. He even told me he wants to come and redo the knocking on my door like Brian Urlacher did next time he's in Chicago. But I got a feeling, if there is an induction presentation, Doug definitely would do it. He'd fly in from Phoenix with no problem. We have a close relationship, me and Doug.
That's great.
He loves that. You know, he always says, well, Don, you know, the Bear Man's my only only fan, he says, the only famous fan left.
That would be as great a moment as Mean Joe Green throwing his jersey to that kid in the Coke commercial.
Right.
Haven't done that. That's a great fan moment. Bear Man, a.k.a. Don Wachter from Plainfield, he is waiting for the knock on the door that is going to happen in the next couple of hours. Don, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck.
And, thank you very much.
Yeah,
let's
enjoy
go
your
Bear
time.
Nation.
Yeah, and just know we're all pulling for you, so go get them.
Thank you. Yeah, the Chicago media has been great to me these last two, 3 weeks. I've been amazed how great they have been, and talking me up and so forth. That is just special.
Thanks, Don. Appreciate it. Good luck, man.
Bear Man. Bear Man joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Bears 31, the -7.
Yeah, really, -7.
Gosh, Nick, I'll find a way.
Bears,
Bears.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, the field of Democrat candidates, Democrat socialist candidates in particular, for president continues to widen as anticipated. Cory Booker and T-Bone announcing their candidacy this morning.
Yeah, see if you're buying any of this.
I believe that we can build a country where no one is forgotten, no one is left behind, where parents can put food on the table, where there are good-paying jobs with good benefits in every neighborhood, where our criminal justice system keeps us safe instead of shuffling more children into cages and coffins, where we see the faces of our leaders on television and feel pride, not shame. It is not a matter of can we. It's a matter of do we have the collective will, the American will. I believe we do.
Are those the pickle bucket guys behind him?
The bucket boys outside of Wrigley and the cell?
Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry. Guaranteed rate. Excuse me.
G-spot. So Cory Booker's in. How exciting.
No, then I think he goes, I am Cory Booker, and I am running for president.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we're going to hear from the actual president on Tuesday night to say the union address rescheduled. Pelosi telling him not getting any funding for border security.
They're having a negotiation over it in there. There's not going to be any wall money.
Well, that's a problem for the president who says no wall money, no deal.
No, because if there's no wall, it doesn't work. She's just playing games. So if there's no wall, it doesn't work.
So how does this get resolved? For more on these topics and Howard Schultz, and also what it's like to be a barista if Howard Schultz is running for president. They're getting instruction on how to handle Howard Schultz questions from Starbucks customers. Oh, yeah. We're pleased to be joined by Brett Baer, of course, host of Fox News Special Report, 5 p.m. Chicago time during the week. His new book, 3 Days in Moscow, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of the Soviet Empire. Brett, thanks for joining us again. And we're happy to hear you and your family are in good health after that little car accident scare.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, we were blessed. We could have been a lot worse. So everybody's on the mend.
All right, very good. No serious injuries. Everybody's good.
Yeah, well, my wife had a concussion, so she's still bouncing back from that. My son had 14 stitches.
And ooh.
He's okay, and then my 8-year-old lost a tooth, but he's a hockey player, and he thinks it's cool.
And plus, he gets $1 for that if he puts it under the pillow, right?
Yeah. Gosh, he looks like Ovechkin now.
I mean, are you,
he looks like Ovechkin.
That's horrifying. I did not know it was that's severe. Did your car, do you know how it happened? It was just an icy road, and your car flipped over?
Oh, yeah, I know how it happened. I was driving. I tried to stop at a stop sign about 300 yards from the stop sign. It was pure ice. Montana's not a big salt the roads or plow the roads kind of place. And so it was just solid ice, and we slid for 300 yards through the stop sign into the intersection and then got T-boned by a pickup truck, flipped around, and then went into a ditch, and the car flipped over. So It's I'd like not to remember it, but everybody is good, and fortunately the guy in the truck was fine. So and there was a good Samaritan who helped us out. So one, always wear your seatbelts. Two, if you see somebody in trouble, stop. This guy Zach Black was awesome.
Okay, and was everybody in your car wearing their seatbelts?
Everybody except my son, who got the 14 stitches. So he did not put his seatbelt on, and he flew across the back of the car when we flipped over.
See, I have a son, too, that never puts his seatbelt on, and I'm going to tell him this story. So
there you
do, because it's a real learning lesson. Even if you're in an Uber in the back seat, especially with winter weather, just do it. It's so silly not to.
Well, pretty soon, with the elimination of fossil fuels, we're all going to be back to bicycles anyway, so that'll obviate all of this business. All right. Well, again, glad that your family is good and on the mend, and thankful for that Good Samaritan, as you mentioned. But wanted to get to some of the politics of this. So the field shaping up, you know, the Democrats are intent on getting these debates started in just a couple of few months, and so it's sort of right now the window to get in or forever hold your peace for candidates, and thus the concern about an independent candidacy of Howard Schultz derailing all of the enthusiasm for the two dozen candidates that are going to enter on the Dem side.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty still blown away by the reaction to Howard Schultz. He's not even in yet. I've seen him speak. He's really not that enthusiastic speaker. He could use a little caffeine in the speech, but but he's done well in the Q&A, talking to people, and just by the thought of him getting in the race, the reaction has been overwhelming on the Democratic side that, you know, you got to stop him. We're going to boycott Starbucks if it happens. And I think it's really interesting. I mean, obviously, they sense a real threat there. Michael Bloomberg even putting out the stats that he had studied an independent run, and it would embolden or help President Trump for re-election.
Wow. And so how many do you think that we're going to have in total? I mean, we have Cory Booker today announcing his candidacy. I imagine Joe Biden soon and possibly Hillary Clinton. What are you hearing inside the bubble there in D.C.?
No Hillary.
No, I think Hillary Clinton's out. John Podesta said she's not going to run. I believe him. I think the over-under is 20, actually, 20 candidates. You remember we had 17 in the GOP primary in 2015. Our debate started that year in August. This time they'll start in June of this year. And I think there's going to be probably 20, maybe 18 candidates. You've still got a bunch of candidates who are out there looking at it. Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. And let alone the candidates that we're not even talking about, the South Bend mayor. You've got
Can you
Mitch
pronounce
Landrieu
his name?
From Louisiana. Yeah, he's got an exploratory committee. Oh, Buttigieg.
Yeah.
He's easy on a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Well, just rolls right off the tongue, right, Brett?
I don't know. In Illinois, we elected a Blagojevich, so you never know. Here's the thing.
That would be a good ticket. That'd be a good
thing. Blagojevich and Buttigieg.
Buttigieg and Blagojevich.
Can I buy a vowel?
It sings. Is anybody in the Dem field going to run to sort of the center left, or is it all going to be a race to see who's going to make government the biggest and most expensive?
Well, so already the first candidate in was John Delaney, former congressman from Maryland, who's a multimillionaire businessman. He's a kind of a centrist guy. He's spent $1 million already in Iowa. He's been in New Hampshire a bunch. He's just not getting a lot of traction. The power on the party is on the left, on the progressive side. I think you're going to get John Hickenlooper, the governor of Colorado. He'll probably get in a more of a moderate place. But for the most part, it'll be a battle to the left. And you're already seeing it play out with Medicare for All and what the definition of that is and how much does it cost, and the Green New Deal and how much does that cost and what does it do.
And how big the wealth tax is that you want to impose.
Right.
So we have one government shutdown the longest in U.S. history. We know that. A second one is looming. What do you think President Trump should do? I mean, Nancy Pelosi said yesterday, no funding is going to go toward building that wall. Should he declare a national emergency and get this whole thing over with?
You know, this is it's frustrating to cover, because in that same press conference, and obviously that soundbite from Nancy Pelosi was picked up by everybody. No, there's no zero funding for the wall in this compromise. But then she was further pressed, are you in favor of increased barriers along the border? Yes. Yes, I am. So strengthening the fencing? Yes. Yes, you can strengthen the fencing.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you want to call a wall, and what do you want to call barrier, and what do you want to call fencing? If the president is back of the negotiations as far as the semantics, I think that they can get a deal. But if it's left up to Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump, I think you're going to be battling over what is a wall.
Well, right. And you had two House Democrats, Nita Lowey and Lucille Ayard, who basically seemed to contradict Nancy Pelosi, at least her top line pronouncement that you mentioned, no border wall funding. They were talking sort of in generic terms about the broad outlines of a deal. And so if Trump gets, I don't know, a few billion dollars for Normandy fencing and he just calls that a wall, are we done here? Do we get a deal before Tuesday night?
Yes, I think it's still possible. That's where they're headed. I think Democrats will ask for some other things, but I think that's possible to get a deal. I think that shutdown did one thing. It made people think we really don't like shutdowns. And on both sides, because, you know, the Democrats are hearing from their constituents saying, this is ridiculous. Just get some funding for a wall. Just give them something. And then Republicans were saying, you guys are idiots. You know, like, why are we shutting down the government? What was the upside? So I think they're going to do everything they can to avoid a shutdown this time.
Is there any early indication about the contents of Trump's State of the Union address on Tuesday night? Is it going to be your typical braggadocious snore, or is he going to do anything interesting?
We don't know the content yet, but, you know, with Donald Trump, I would bet interesting is where they lean. There'll be more personal stories, I think, like you saw last time, where, you know, the guy with the crutch who made it across to South Korea from the north, you know, he was in the First Lady's area. I think, it'll be something, but the fascinating juxtaposition of Nancy Pelosi now behind his left shoulder, reacting or not reacting to everything he says is going to be interesting theater anyway.
All right. He is Brett Baer, Fox News anchor, special report, 5 p.m. weekday, Chicago time, and the book, 3 Days in Moscow, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of the Soviet Empire. Brett, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
We're so glad you guys are safe. And Brett joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, I should have mentioned this to Brett Baer. Did you see this? And I should have mentioned this to Don Wachter, too.
What?
Bear Man.
Oh, and by the way, if he does win, it'll be breaking news and we'll bring it to you.
Absolutely. We're waiting. He's on the clock. He's
sitting by the door in his hotel room waiting to see if he gets the knock at the door.
It should be before the end of the show.
Oh, yeah. That's why. Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be in about an hour. Yeah.
This is also coming to Soldier Field. In addition to a statue of Don Wachter after he's inducted into the Hall of Fame. In June, golf will come to Soldier Field.
What?
$85, $84.99 to be specific. You can hit 18 balls from the upper deck in Soldier Field onto greens set up on the field. Upper Deck Golf is doing this experience.
Upper Deck Golf.
Yeah.
Have you been? They have a great facility in Vegas, too.
They're doing the same event at FedEx Stadium in D.C., April.
What day is it?
It's April, not June. April 19 to 21 event.
Oh, that's golfers around your birthday time.
Yeah.
It's a Dan's birthday. We'll send you to Upper Deck in Soldier Field.
Thank you. And we also play.
I'll buy you a bucket of balls.
Play 9 holes. So there's greens set up on the field, and you get 2 balls per hole.
Ah.
$85. Yeah, you know, you can all can pitch in. I know, that's too big. It's too big a nut for anybody individually.
You know, that might be squeezing the wallet a little much.
Yeah.
I mean, we like you, but I don't know if we like you that much.
If you land on the green, you get a par. Off the green is a bogey. And inside a circle near the pin is a birdie.
Sweet.
Takes about 90 minutes, putting and chipping challenges, music, beer, food.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, I'll stay.
I'll
stay in Chicago for just through the 21st of April, can do this Upper Deck.
Is this your big birthday too?
My big birthday.
Yeah, I count all the.
Every birthday is a big birthday.
Oh
no, I'm not going to be 60 like you are this
year. Take it down a few decades.
So that's a little event happening in Chicago as you're sort of de-thawing. And de-icing, I should say, from this week. You can think about playing golf at Chosier Field in just two short months.
And you can also play golf with us if you come with us on our trip. We are heading to Sunny Nuevo Vallarta, Mexico. That's where we'll be heading with Apple Vacations. And you're invited to come along with us April 6th through April 13th. We'll be staying at the beautiful Maribel Residences Luxury Resort. Check out this place online. Every room, it's like a suite. You have a living room. Some places have kitchens. It's 1,400 square feet. That's the average size of a room. So you want to come with us. It's all-inclusive resort, 10 minutes from the airport. It has 6 gourmet restaurants, 2 bars, 24-hour room service. This beautiful all-inclusive resort is situated between the Rainforest Mountains and the Pacific Ocean. It's a 5-minute walk to the beach, and it's simply gorgeous. But, Dan, the best part, there are 9 golf courses nearby. And the one associated with the hotel is called the Flamingo, and you're going to want to play golf there. You can also snorkel, play tennis, or head to the spa. To get more information, where do we go? We go to 560theanswer.com/passport, and every year this trip keeps getting bigger and better, and we have couples that return every single year. Actually, I remember North State Steel?
Yeah.
Tam, that they're coming. Walshes will be on the trip, and we know our good friend Jennifer and Jonathan are coming.
The North State Steel couple, they like tequila like I do.
Right. I think, that's right. You were with them on that day.
I was.
That infamous day. Mm. Well, we always have fun on our trips, and we want you to come with us. And the price that Apple Vacation has secured for this trip is incredible and exclusive to us, but it's only available for a limited time. So don't miss out. Book your trip today. Get out of this horrible weather and enjoy a week with us in Nuevo Vallarta, Mexico, 560theanswer.com/passport.
Hola!
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, big jobs number for January, 304,000 jobs. That's nearly double the estimate of 165, nearly 100,000 more than ADP predicted at 213 earlier this week. So expect a good day on Wall Street in response to that jobs number, plus the corporate reports, Boeing, Facebook, Amazon, another record. We'll talk to Scott Shalady, Scott the Cow Guy. There he is at 8 o'clock about that. But got another airplane story we got to get through.
Oh, no. Is this somebody being too fat to fly?
United Airlines passenger. She's got the middle seat.
Uh-oh.
And Amy's giggling about this because this would be her. She's got the middle seat.
Seats, but if I had to, if I was forced to sit in the middle seat, yes.
Mm. She's got the middle seat. She's sitting between two larger individuals, one woman, one man.
Oh, this sounds like something I lived, but okay.
There was no tuba music on that United Airlines flight, but you get the gist of it.
Where were they flying from where to where? How long did she have to suffer?
4 hours.
Through the fatness. That's a long flight. Anything over 3.5 to me is a long flight.
So would you do this? She's feeling a little bit...
claustrophobic, probably, and probably can't breathe.
A little crunched in. So she gets on her cell phone, and she starts talking about the people sitting next to her like they're not sitting next to her.
I don't know how I'm going to do this for the next 4 hours. This is just impossible because they're squishing me. Like, freaking, it's just unbelievable. Yeah, I flew with Miles. I don't have my choice. Where are you? Yeah, me too. I'm stuck, but at least they'll keep you warm.
Oh, please, okay?
They have a window.
I gotta call you back, baby. I can't do this.
So that's her talking to one of the flight attendants. Find me a window, get me out here. With the part that was bleeped out, that's Norma Rogers, who was sitting in the window seat, listening to her being called fat by the woman in the middle seat, who's unidentified at this point. She wants her out, too. Obviously, because you have somebody saying you're, and she says literally, fat pig later on. Both about Miss Rogers sitting in the window seat and this gentleman sitting in the aisle seat who doesn't say anything. But Norma Rogers, she responds and the matter escalates.
Excuse me. Can you find her another seat? Because I will not be verbally abused by this or anybody else.
Okay. Yes,
I will not be verbally abused by anybody. Okay. I'm not tolerating it.
I can't sit here because it's both so big. I'm left and right. I can't even stand
here.
Sit here.
Do you want to come up and stand and then we'll find?
Yes, please. Place. Yes, please. Yes, please. Because I can't sit like this.
I eat salad. Other passengers get involved.
Well, I'm not politically correct.
Make America great again. That's a good example.
Why don't you sit here?
They bring Trump into it.
Kiss my fat ass, okay? Who do I report her to?
You should have talked to me.
Can you have the person come back? I would like to report and I would like to file a report against her.
Just
I'm a platinum member. I don't tolerate this from nobody. I mean, I travel every week, and this is the first time I've ever put up with this crap, and I'm not having it.
I understand completely.
I am not starting my new year off with this type of negativity.
I'll go get my bursar right away.
Okay, thank you.
So the other passengers, you know,
turned on her.
Turned on the woman who was being moved. The woman saying, I'm not politically correct. I can't breathe. I'm so squished. I eat salad. Okay, why don't you try and sit between those two big pigs? And that's when Roger shot back, bitch, kiss my fat ass. How many times has this happened to you with you being the woman having to be moved and the entire flight turning on you, Amy Jacobson? I know it's happened to you, but we'll also take incidents like this from others. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line.
And who's with me is, if you're too fat to fly, that's what I call it, buy a second seat. Honestly, if you're encroaching on my space,
uh-oh.
I mean, not the armrest, but over the armrest, like it's gurgling up and over the armrest, you should buy a second seat.
If your girth spills over the armrest,
you have to buy a
second seat.
Yeah. And you can buy that second seat. I'm getting a panic attack listening to this because I know what it's like not to breathe. I couldn't breathe when I was between those two wrappers. And I was 9 months pregnant. Probably shouldn't have been flying.
Notorious B.I.G. and Missy Elliott.
And I was like this, and then I had my stomach, and all of a sudden, I'm like, I couldn't breathe. Their fatness was killing me. I was dying. So I called the flight attendant over. I said, I need oxygen. Is there a doctor on the plane? They brought me back. I was chugging water because they didn't want me to start having contractions because their fatness was pushing my belly in on both sides. I was pregnant. It was bad. So I was getting oxygen. Nobody on the plane turned to me. I didn't turn around and say fat. They knew that they were because they were trying to flub it over into their side, you know, because they knew I was pregnant. But it didn't matter because the farms were just... I mean, that sounds awful. And God is going to curse me. I'm going to be obese someday. But anywho, they felt bad about it. I know that
shunned.
They felt bad about it.
And you're going to be shunned.
And then I didn't say a word. I didn't make any disparaging remarks. They got me the oxygen. The doctor came back. And then the flight attendant said, could somebody please switch? We have a pregnant woman on the plane. It's kind of close.
Pregnant. Shame on you,
here.
Pregnant woman.
And you know who switched seats with me? The photographer from Channel 2. He got up. And he sat back there, and I sat in row 2 where he was sitting. And I looked at him, and he flipped me the bird. He's like, thanks a lot, Jacobson. This is real fun.
And
he was sitting there. Krumsky was his name. It was funny, but it was very nice of him to do that.
And he died on that flight, as I recall.
No, he did not.
Oh.
He has since retired from Channel 2. But
because
yeah,
of that
was
incident.
Very nice of him to
He retired
do that.
Because of that incident.
No, I didn't retire because of that. But I'm just saying.
So it wasn't a big deal, actually.
I'm having a hard time breathing just talking about this story. I'm not kidding you. I have a heart condition.
Okay.
People should
PTSD. PTSD. Are you?
I'm just saying. Passengers have some rights, and she handled it the wrong way by using the pig word.
Yes, obviously.
You know, but then she even said, I'm not politically correct. And then somebody, of course, yells out, MAGA. Make America Great Again, that makes me mad.
Well, that's
because we don't know what her political affiliation is.
So here, I want to go back to your experience, though. So the guy who switched seats with you.
Yes, Krupski.
Krupski.
Channel 2 photographer.
He's bigger than you.
No. At that time, he's a tall, skinny dude. And I'm tall and thin, but I had a big, huge belly. And I gained like 75 pounds when I was pregnant. I was large margin in charge, if you know what I'm saying.
Must have been disgusting.
Oh, yeah. My girth was flapping over, too.
Fat pig.
But I was like this, and then that was pushing on my belly, and then my lungs were collapsing. Get oxygen.
Sorry, I'm having a panic attack. PTSD.
Sure, the county commissioner pulled over in Pennsylvania, Amy on a flight while pregnant. It's basically the same deal. So I just don't even understand, like, just the physics of this. Explain this. So the armrests bind people in.
Yeah.
But you're saying,
that's why I never get a middle seat.
Did they just enveloped the armrest and it kept flowing
yes,
over?
Yes. You couldn't even. This is how bad was it? It was so bad that I couldn't put my arm on either armrest because both of their bodies had eaten up a fourth of the seat each side. So I had a half of a seat.
He was so fat, that Fat Albertson. Boy, that guy's big.
That's why I don't get a middle seat, because if you have a window seat, at least you have one armrest. If you have the aisle seat, you at least have one armrest. And the last time I flew from San Francisco to Chicago, the guy next to me did not like Bunky, and Bunky was in his space, and we got him moved.
Now, the guy sitting next to the woman in the middle seat on this United flight,
I
love this guy. He's just a big dude sitting there. He doesn't say a word. He doesn't acknowledge anybody. He's basically just thinking to himself, whatever. I want to get this thing moving, and I want to get to from point A to point B. He doesn't engage at all. It's pretty interesting.
So there's video? I mean, can we see?
Oh, there's video. Oh,
well,
yeah.
I'll let you know if they're large and in charge. All right, video,
yeah.
United.
All right. Now, ease into that. I don't want you to hyperventilate.
Ooh.
The vicarious experience. All right.
I'll turn the volume down because we did just hear it. I need to see how bad it is for this woman.
Sure.
She's just crying wolf.
Cindy and Joliet, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Hi, Amy. You know, this gives a whole new meaning to the word tonnage, but when you have that spillage, it's really uncomfortable, and I really want to know how the airlines balance people's weight. And I kind of think this carry-on law and all this has a lot to do with the expanding girth of the traveler. You know, it's really,
well, that's,
you know.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Cindy. You've given me an idea. We can have.
People are huge.
I mean.
Yeah,
they're big, right.
Okay.
They're big and beautiful.
I know. And you're right. The guy's just sitting there not saying a word.
I love that guy.
He is cool.
So here's the idea. You know how your carry-on bag has to fit into that device, the four corners of that device before you get on? If it's a close call, they make you put your bag in there to see if it will fit.
Right,
in the over.
Yeah.
Just do that for people. Come up with a people device where you have to, you know, meet the width and length
out.
Requirements of the fuselage in order to get on the flight. How about that?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, honestly, if you're that large, you have got to buy two seats, please.
John in Naperville.
Yeah, two quick points. You know, they hurt us in like cattles nowadays, and if you're going to complain, buy first class. And the other thing is, if the airlines could have, like, seats for people who are disabled and all that stuff, why can't they just have, like, a few seats that they have for obese people?
Well, thanks for the call, John. Well, but then.
No, because why do I have to pay? Then I'd have to pay more to accommodate their seating.
Well, also.
They should buy two seats.
Also, if it was special seating for obese people, that's 40% of every flight.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting bigger and bigger as a country. And we're getting so big.
How big are we getting?
That American Airlines, I know, because that's my carrier of choice. They're expanding. They're making the bathrooms bigger because people can't sit there on the.
Jim in Rockford.
Yeah, you know, I worked in the aerospace industry, and the seat sizes are specified by the particular airline. Like the Chinese airlines, they'll put really tiny ones in because people are smaller. The American airline companies, they need to recognize people are getting larger, and they should just charge people by the pound or by the girth like they do with baggage. Like you say, not deny them entry into the airplane, but they should just reserve it and charge you extra. Like you said, if you don't fit into the, you know, into the box, they charge you extra.
Thanks for the call, Jim.
And they were going from Las Vegas to Newark.
Yeah, 4 hours.
That's a long flight.
Text, per Jim and Rutherford, why do fat people get to fly at no extra cost, but I can't have my bag over 50 pounds? That's an equity issue.
I like this.
Yeah.
And I'm not a snob. I mean, you know, I'm not.
Of course not. Don't be ridiculous.
I'm not.
No,
but,
serious.
But,
no,
I mean, something's got to give.
What if you can't fit in one seat and you did buy two, what if they just reroute you to like a DHL or a FedEx cargo plane?
You stop. I'm telling you, one time I took a flight and the man next to me had a seat open because somebody tried to move into that seat. And he said, no, I bought two seats. And I applauded him. I'm like, that is awesome that you did that. You want to make sure people are comfortable on this 5.5 hour flight.
I don't feel like being a part like of communities that are thrown together through circumstance like all the passengers in a particular flight.
Yeah.
I'm like that dude that was sitting on the aisle seat with her. I'm like, I don't want to get involved in this. I don't want to be in a fight on this flight. I'm in my seat. Let's just get this thing moving. You're not my friend. I'm not rallying to your defense. I mean, unless there's something violent going on, like Dr. Dow, you got to help pull him off the plane. I get that. But all this stuff. God, must I be involved in a political altercation on my flight from Vegas to Newark too? Can I just watch whatever silly sitcom they're going to put on? The Shrek movie. Paul and Elgin, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Go Hawkeyes. I've had two examples. One was, I'm pretty good size. I'm like 320.
Yeah, that's good size.
But what you do is you kind of you start to joke around. You walk in, you see you're going to have to sit either between some people, and you say, hey, guess what? And then they start looking, and they're like, okay, do you want the outside? You have to kind of negotiate a little bit.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you get those seat extenders, then you know you got to start losing weight.
Well, no, yeah, the extended seatbelt. Hey, I was on a plane once, and they ran out. Listen, people were so fat.
How fat were they?
That they ran out of seatbelt extenders.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
So people just flew without seatbelts. We were in Turks and Caicos to Miami.
So, Paul.
The other time, it didn't involve weight, but I didn't have a cold until I started going on the takeoff. I started sneezing so much, and I didn't bring any tissues. I looked like a glazed donut in 15 minutes, and everybody had to leave after a while.
I wouldn't want to sit next to that.
They had to leave they jumped off the plane. So, Paul, let me ask you this. Like, do you ever fly Southwest and you're like in the C group, and so by the time you get on, there's only middle seats? And if you do, can you convey the look on people's faces as you're scanning the middle seats you're going to sit in?
Yeah, I joke about it. I said, hey, you know what? Sorry, Florida's got a lot of good restaurants. Which seat do you want to sit in?
All right, Paul. Andy and Hinsdale.
This kind of stuff is totally a fault of the airlines because they use zero common sense. You know, Amy, you like flying American. They board 17 classes of people before the regular people can get on.
I know.
You know,
premium
they give disability to anybody who doesn't need it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that the way to deal with it is just be overly nice to the airline employees because they're so used to getting abused all the time.
Yeah.
When you show them a little bit of civility, they will totally take care of you. I've gotten so many upgrades and free stuff because I was just nice to them. They're kind of in shock. So you can't start calling people pigs and start raising a ruckus because then the airline employees are going to be like, get this person out of here.
No. Thanks for the call. So that's a good advice because normally, like, I snap my fingers to get these flight attendants' attention.
Ew.
And I say,
gross.
I'll have another Dewar's and soda, and this time spill a little in the glass, toots. And they don't seem to like that. So I think Andy might be onto something. Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah, I've been spilled on, splashed on, whatever. Yeah, I'm not a real big guy. I'm 6'1", but I'm not big circumference. And I used to fly, not so much anymore, but hundreds of thousands of miles. And I drew the line. It was not too many really huge women. Pregnancy, they kind of got a pass because I understand that's just tough. But I drew the line when the really big person would move, would tilt the armrest up, and then it just like their body extruded over onto me. You wanted to fill in all the extra spaces. And I said always, so look, vivid. The armrest goes down. And the guy said, you know, look, it's hard for me. And I said, you know, deal with it, pal, because I really don't want the ocean of you flowing onto my beach, okay? That's it. But a lot of these confrontations, well, there weren't that many, but a lot of them, you know, were happening in not U.S. countries. So, you know, if you get tossed off an airplane in, like, Turkey, does that turn into a Midnight Express rerun?
Yeah,
or something?
Exactly. You might not get on another plane, right?
Exactly. So you got to keep your cool. But the thing, it would always be, look, the armrest. I paid for my seat up to here. This armrest goes down. If you squeeze under and over it and flow onto me, I'll be grossed out, but I can't really do anything about it. And you know what? I have a feeling you don't like it either, pal.
Yeah. I think the
armrest stays down.
Thanks for the call, Ralph. And I think it's a good idea, too. I think you just treat commercial flying like you're a hostage being flown out of Iran. Just think Argo. And you want to be on this flight. You got to be on this flight because there might not be another flight. I think that's good advice.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I was mentioning earlier in the show after we had Brett Baer on, it'd be fun for Brett to come to town to participate in April in this upper deck event at Soldier Field where you can hit golf balls off the upper deck onto nine greens that they set up on Soldier Field. Now, this would be fun for Scott Shalady to come back to the city.
Is he a big golfer?
No, this would be.
Oh, this would be. Okay.
Price Theory Summer Camp at University of Chicago.
Oh, can you sign me up for that too?
Yeah. The Becker Friedman Institute, as in Gary Becker and Milton Friedman. Yeah. Price Theory Summer Camp to introduce students from outside the University of Chicago to price theory, which emphasizes the application of basic economic tools to problems. That would be good for you, too, especially since you've just completed that online trading academy course.
Exactly.
Nice maybe transition.
Maybe you can sponsor Peyton and Eli.
Sure, I can.
They're into numbers. I love that stuff.
Price Theory Summer Camp for the kids. That sounds like fun.
Hey, guys, I got a new camp for us.
All right, it's time to be joined by Scott the Cow Guy, Scott Shalady, Fox Business contributor. That's a muted cow.
That's better.
That's not really great.
And Amy,
like a top.
Amy, I am a golfer, and I am big, but I don't know if that means I'm a big golfer.
Heyo,
zing. you would not be able to sit next to Amy on a plane. She's very, she's very persnickety. No, I'm saying, you know.
He's not that big. Oh, my God.
Just saying. We were just having this discussion. All right, Scott, here's the deal. We got 304,000 jobs created in January. We got strong corporate reports from the likes of your Facebooks and your Amazons and your Boeings. We got a market rally in January. Is all of that enough to turn you from a grizzled cynic to a silly-hearted optimism about 2019? It's a silly hard optimist about 2019.
No, I think we still have a chance, an outside chance for some decent growth. I mean, high twos, maybe 3% in 2019. So, no, things are okay. That was a good report. What they won't talk to you about is after Jay Powell, the chairman of the Fed, speech this week, this number and this report might have just turned the Federal Reserve into a bunch of Keystone Cops. Because they went way to the dovish side of things this week and trying to tell the market we're going to be transparent, we're going to be day-to-day, we're going to be data-dependent. And that was to try to settle the market down from what the last 6 weeks of 2018 brought us, which was absolute mayhem and chaos. And now he's got to deal with this strong report, which would suggest otherwise. So they're going to be turning on their heads right now
And that's going to be fun to watch for the next 6 months, because that really won't be talked about a lot. This is a strong report, and it's really going to put the Fed in another problem, because they're good at getting themselves in those corners, but it's going to be interesting to see how they could try and talk their way out of it.
Now, the unemployment rate ticked a little higher to 4%, but do you think that's the effect of the government shutdown?
Well, that's another good point, Amy. Yeah, I think that's people that really still had a job that answered, no, I don't have a job. I think that's really what that was. But number two is that, you know, if you're the average investor, and I think, Dan, you'd probably agree with this, you'd be hoping for another government shutdown, because
yeah, right.
These numbers prove to you that those 800,000 people are really non-essential, right?
Well, exactly. And all of this doom and gloom, including from the likes of Jamie Dimon playing politician again, which he should really try to resist the temptation to do, talking about the temporary furlough of 800,000 non-essentials is going to result in zero GDP growth for the first quarter. I mean, give me a break. Does he understand where growth comes from?
Right, well, that's absolute garbage to suggest that our economy, the size of our economy, can be held hostage by 800,000 non-essential employees. And let me ask you a question. I wonder if he has 800,000 non-essential employees in his firm. No, they're all fired.
Yeah. Well, some of those people that were furloughed.
What government? What
FBI agents?
Yeah, but I mean, think about it. The government ran just fine, basically, right? And it wasn't if it wasn't for the fact the public worry about some air traffic controllers. I mean, look at this number. This was over that period. There's going to be a lot of investors out there saying, "Hey, let's have another government shutdown in February, because if this is what it brings, let's keep going."
Yeah, it's interesting. James Freeman, writing the Wall Street Journal yesterday before the jobs number was posted today, noted many political reporters spent the last 6 weeks cataloging alleged harms to the economy from the partial government shutdown. Meanwhile, outside of government, America's small companies were ramping up their historic effort to employ new workers. Job creation, according to an NFIB report, was solid in January with a net addition of 0.33 workers per firm, which was up from 0.25 in December. That's from NFIB chief economist William Dunkelberg. So, you know, maybe the focus should be seeing if those non-essentials in the federal government can actually make their bones in the private sector where small businesses are growing.
Right. And in the small businesses, that, I mean, James, he's a good guy. He's a friend of mine, and he's a smart cookie, and he's exactly right there. But those numbers were strong in December, and they got even stronger in January for the small businesses. That's a good thing. And number two is you're right. You know what? Why can't we talk about all the benefits that these non-essential 800,000 government employees get that the at-will employee in the public sector does not get, right? There's a lot of people that I work with on a day-to-day basis can lose their job tomorrow, and they have no recourse. Mm-hmm. So I was getting angrier and angrier as this thing went on about how these people can hold this economy hostage, and guess what? They can't. These numbers prove it.
So these job numbers, it's going to be good for stock market today, do you think? We're going to close
high? Stock market's a vote today about what you think is going to happen in 6 months' time. So it's hard to really say an individual event today is going to make that big of a difference. These are just strong, and what this does is say that little hiccup that we had towards the end of last year was wrong, and it was a lot of people's imaginations being their own worst enemy. But number two is that what's going to really help the stock market is if we get some more good news out of China with with the tariffs. That's kind of really what's been hanging over people's heads. We kind of got the Fed out of the way this week by saying that they're going to be ultra dovish and listen to the market, but now they're going to be in a box now. If we continue to get strong numbers, they're going to have to turn on their heads, and they could actually come out of this really looking like the bad ones.
As somebody who was been stationed in London for, 15 of the last 30 years, are we paying too much attention to how Brexit goes? Is it that important to America's growth and the robustness of our economy? Or is how that still has yet to play out really important to America?
No, I think what sells is the drama. I don't think it's going to be that important. But the interesting part of the drama is how similar that situation is to the U.S.'s situation with Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump, right? Because the people voted for Donald Trump, and arguably they voted for his campaign promises. So a stretch could say the people voted in the U.S. for border security or border wall, because that was one of his pledges. In the U.K., the people voted to leave Europe. So to make it really easy for all the listeners, it's as if we elected Donald Trump as president, but we had to have that election ratified by Congress, which would never happen, right? Because those people are crazy. Well, the British people elected to leave the European Union, and it has to be basically ratified by Parliament. And that's the problem that they're having over there. So now, Theresa May, which is the Donald Trump of Great Britain, is having a difficult time dealing, trying to make a deal with Europe to leave and also appease the voters. Like Donald Trump's trying to deal with Nancy Pelosi and trying to appeal to the voters. So those things are really in parallel. And it's more interesting in the drama, but as far as an economic impact, I don't think it's a big deal.
Well, how much would the UK save if they left the European Union?
Well, that's how much would it cost the UK to stay in the European Union for the next 50 years? Mm-hmm. That's the question you want to think. I mean, it's going to cost them, you know, $50 billion, $60 billion probably to leave now. Yeah. But what's the cost of funding a European army, because there's rattlings about that starting up? What's the cost of bailing out another small European country or a banking system somewhere in Europe? What are those costs going to be over the next 50 years? I think they're going to be gigantic. So whatever you have to do today to pull that bandit up quickly, I think you'll save a ton of money going forward, because the European Union is just, it's bureaucracy run amok.
And what is your sense of importance of a deal on trade with China here as negotiations continue in earnest?
I think that's probably the most important thing for the market right now. I don't think there's anything else out there that you're going to be, I mean, the Fed was something we were all worried about, but they put themselves in a box yesterday, but the market liked it, right? Or whenever Powell spoke. So the next biggest thing is going to be tariffs. And I guess the U.S. government came out this morning and said that their March deadline is a hard deadline. It will not be extended. So that could be something that upsets the apple cart. But look at the market. Look at these numbers. It's hard to say how much that will upset the apple cart. But I do know that if we do get a trade deal with China and everybody's happy with something, they've all given up something, but they all can go back and say they've won something, it will be good for the markets, because that's what this market really is kind of slowing down about. It's 100% the tariffs to me.
He is Scott Shalady, Scott the Cow Guy, Fox Business contributor. Scott, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good weekend.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Danny, you're participating in the company chili cook-off?
No. This story out of Phoenix, speaking of food. Phoenix restaurant.
Yes.
Rashad Thomas is his name.
He's in the case of the Amy's there, are you?
Rashad right. Thomas, husband, father, U.S. Air Force veteran, poet, and essayist. Who determines what's offensive? Is the question he asks himself, and then he proceeds to answer. A photo in a downtown Phoenix restaurant raises the question. The photo is of coal miners covered in soot drinking at a pub. Picture of them on a wall in downtown Phoenix. You see the problem, don't you?
Why is there a problem? It's what people used to do. You work all day, you go home, you have a shot and a beer. Before you go home, excuse me.
The photo of the men covered in soot.
That's what if you've seen people come out of a coal mine, that's what they look like.
Covered in soot.
Oh, my. Are you kidding me? They think that's blackface?
Bingo.
No way. You seen people that work in the Gary Steel Mill? They come out. They've got soot and black stuff on their face.
Because they're racist.
No, they're not racist. It's part of the job unless you shower there.
Rashad Thomas said the photograph caught his attention. Friends told him it's coal miners at a pub after work. You know why? Because it was a photograph of coal miners at a pub after work. That's why they told him that. I asked a Latinx. Oh,
what's a Latinx?
It's Latino, Mexican. But to cover the gender spectrum.
Okay.
Yeah. Got to get the nomenclature down if you want to live in 1984, Amy. I asked a Latinx and white woman for their opinion. Couldn't ask friends. He's got to identify their race. And general gender fluidity. They said it looked like coal miners at a pub after work. Boy, everybody keeps telling this guy the same thing, but he's not having it.
I saw the picture. It looks like a bunch of coal miners after work at a pub.
That's because it is.
Having a shot and a beer.
But you have to look through the actual picture to the reality. Then when he kept asking him, in the same way that I kept asking you, to find the hidden lethal meaning, they stepped back, frowned, and said it's men in blackface. I asked the waitress to speak with a manager. Instead, I spoke with a white restaurant owner. Offered my explanation of why the photograph was offensive, and yet the photograph remained. For me, the coal miners disappeared and a film honored for its artistic merit, despite being the most racist propaganda film films ever, Birth of a Nation, surfaces in which white actors appear in blackface. The white owner saw coal miners in the photograph, therefore it was not offensive. That photo, writes Mr. Thomas, tells me I'm not welcome.
It's part of our nation's history.
Blackface is only a glimpse of a larger issue, he writes. The larger issue is the lack of representation of marginalized people and their voices in Phoenix. Boy, oh boy. I mean, it's a lot to read into what a photo of coal miners, isn't it? Apparently not. Frequently, Mr. Thomas adds, I enter art galleries and I'm not represented in the art. Well, heavens. Which leads to uneducated curation for exhibitions. While shopping, I'm ignored because it's assumed I'm unable to purchase anything, or I'm followed by a security guard because it's assumed I'm a threat to the store. Uh-huh. At a downtown Phoenix restaurant, my concern that the photograph of men in blackface, coal miners, was a threat to me, and my face and voice were ignored. They weren't ignored. They disagreed with you. A concept that's lost in this day and age. I get it. The operators of that downtown restaurant can choose to take the photograph down, leave it up, or create a title card with an intention statement. No matter their decision, I think the photograph should be taken down, sacrificing one image for the greater good.
All right, just, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
That, and then did you hear about the owner of a restaurant in San Mateo, California? If you wear a MAGA hat, he cannot serve you. He said, you know, if you come in here wearing, it's like similar to wearing a swastika, white hood, or any other symbol of intolerance and hate. Now, but guess what, Dan? It hasn't happened yet. But if it does happen.
I don't care. I mean, he doesn't have to serve people with a MAGA hat on. Doesn't bother me.
I want to go in there with a MAGA hat.
Sacrificing one image for the greater good. That's the dangerous statement. Oh my God. That's where you have the ushering in of totalitarianism. I mean, I hate to be dramatic about it. When you start talking about this is the truth of an offering, an artistic offering of any sort, or this is my interpretation of it that's different than the artist's interpretation, and you get to use the state, and he's not saying that here, but let me tell you, this is where he wants to go. Anybody who speaks in the parlance of the greater good and sacrifice, imposed sacrifice. This is how you get the arts and the educators and the clergy to fold in with the state, and that's how you foment the rise of fascism. That's how it actually happens. Not a couple of knuckleheads who voted for Trump wearing a MAGA hat. That's not how it happens. What you're seeing here, where truth is irrelevant and one perspective is morally superior to the other as it pertains to a photograph, and the difference in perspectives demands censorship, self-censorship, or the next baby step, imposed censorship, that's where you start to see your liberty really constricted. That's where you're far down the path on a dangerous road.
We have some happy breaking news, Dan.
Bear Man,
Don Wachter.
Or Wachter.
Wachter.
He was only on the
got
show
the knock. He's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, the fan aisle of the Hall of Fame.
The sound of two hands clapping, so Don Wachter.
He got the knock. We have him on in the 6:35 hour. So congratulations.
Bear Man, we're going to send our interview with him at 6:35 to Dumont at the Museum of Broadcast Communication.
Exactly. Was that excellent?
All right.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. President Trump has now weighed in on the case of the alleged attack against Empire star Jussie Smollett in Chicago on Tuesday morning. Here's the president.
The Chicago situation, the actor from Empire, who was allegedly attacked with racist and homophobic.
That, I can tell you, is horrible. I've seen it last night. I think that's horrible. It doesn't get worse, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, so that's the president weighing in on what he understands to be the case based on the allegations made, and despite the fact that, you know, the likes of No Justice, No Peace, Maxine Waters have blamed him for the alleged attack, if indeed it did occur, because there's still a lot of questions surrounding its occurrence.
Yeah, and there, my sources are telling me that they are going to subpoena his phone records along with his manager. His name is Brandon Moore, who apparently they both live in the same building, who he's apparently on the phone with at the time that these alleged assailants yelled, "This is MAGA country." Yeah, because they didn't hand over their phones to investigate. Even redacted, they, you know, even said you can, you know, redact other phone numbers or take out. We just want to make sure that you two were on the phone together, as you told us you were. Also, I've heard that they're trying to get a warrant to search his apartment, looking for items such as other, you know, clothing line, rope that was not tied like a noose around his neck. It was tied like a tie around his neck that was still on him when police arrived at his manager's apartment.
Well, now, Eddie Johnson, the Chicago police superintendent, says the police have no reason to believe he's not being genuine.
Oh, are they saying that because he's a minority, gay, Hollywood star? We don't have a lot of them here in Chicago because they're mostly based, obviously, in Los Angeles. But are we giving him too much attention? I mean, they have 20 detectives on his case. And my friend told me normally they'll have two or three for a homicide. And he was just, he has a little scratch under his face. I'm not saying that something didn't happen, but I don't think it went down as he told police that it did. And those two people that they released that surveillance video, Dan, they have not generated one tip from releasing that photo.
The two silhouettes in the vicinity at around the time of the alleged attack, a good point was made over at CWB Chicago. Quoting a tweet here, consideration regarding the potential persons of interest, those two silhouetted individuals on that video snapshot. The men are walking away from the attack scene 15 to 30 minutes before the incident, per the police's timing of the events. So maybe that's why those the photo of those two individuals, the silhouettes of those two individuals, hasn't gone anywhere, because of the point CWB makes. They're in the vicinity, but that picture is 15 to 30 minutes before the alleged attack occurred, and they're walking in the opposite direction. Well, that makes some sense.
According to Second City blog, it's, you know, Chicago police officers go on there.
Second City cop, excuse me.
They said that, you know, bosses want to look like they're doing something to appease Mayor Emanuel and the Hollywood money people. That's why they released this photo, which has absolutely nothing to do, they think, with the attack or alleged attack.
TMZ has a report on this, too. TMZ is helping to make this an international story. They've got a report of a witness of sorts. A woman who lives in Smollett's apartment building told cops she saw a suspicious man, whom she said looked like a redneck, loitering just outside the entrance to the building an hour and a half before Jussie says he was attacked. The woman, who would not let TMZ use her name, said she walked out of her building at 12:30 a.m. on Tuesday morning to take her dogs out and saw a man near the door, pacing between the parking garage and entrance, looking agitated and smoking a cigarette. She's sure she wasn't watching an Orson Welles movie. She says he looked out of place. He was a white man with scruff on his face, wearing a blue winter beanie, a blue zip-up sweatshirt with a hood, and blue jeans that were too short, exposing thick gray hunting socks with camel-colored dress shoes. She says, in addition, she noticed what looked like a rope or a clothesline protruding from the bottom of his sweatshirt made of white and blue material. That's pretty detailed. She also added that he was staring at another man 300 feet away who was standing near another entrance to the building. She got creeped out by the man, so after 5 minutes, she retreated back into the building. She woke up at 4 a.m., to find a lot of security personnel around. She was told by the concierge that Jussie Smollett had been attacked, and the concierge implored her to call a detective, gave her two phone numbers. She made contact on Tuesday afternoon, according to the TMZ report.
Also, too, keep in mind, it was the second coldest night of the year. I mean, it was minus 20. And, you know, if you think about it, homicides last month were at a 9-year low. Home robberies, violent crimes, car theft, lowest in 20 years.
Doesn't mean it doesn't
because
happen.
Because of the cold in January.
Doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Yeah, right. But there are still crimes committed. So.
Not at the rate that we normally see. I mean, a 20-year low for that month of January, that's...
But crimes were still committed. So that's not dispositive of anything except probability. Well,
and the story that lady provided to TMZ, which she didn't give her name, so police can't talk to her, and according to our sources...
Well, she called police, so...
According to TMZ, but they don't know that they got the phone call.
Well, how do you know that?
My friend doesn't know about that phone call who works as one of the detectives investigating the case. And also the details she described.
20 detectives.
Yeah, that's wonderful. But guess what, honey? They're still going through hundreds of hours of videos. They don't have what she's describing on the surveillance tape of that building. And that's a little bit of a problem.
So a redneck looking guy with camel colored dress shoes, huh?
Holding a rope? What kind of rope was it hanging?
That's a lot of detail. Taking her dog out for a quick walk, 12:30 a.m. on Tuesday morning. She's out there for 5 minutes, and she's got the drop on this guy like it's a scene from, you know, a Graham Greene novel. A lot of detail for an eyewitness.
Must be an imaginary figure because it's not on the tape.
I don't know if it's imaginary or not. They obviously haven't been identified. Then she's got the drop on this guy with that level of detail, and she sees him staring at another man 300 feet away. So she's sizing up this whole dynamic outside of her apartment building while she's, you know, taking the dog out for a quick squirt. Does that strike you as plausible? Does this case, the allegations in this case made by Jussie Smollett, strike you as plausible?
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. This morning, TMZ is saying that sources wanted to clear up two points. First, that Jussie told cops his assailants were wearing MAGA hats. That's not true. They just screamed MAGA country. This is MAGA country. And the last point, that are reports that Jussie had the rope around his neck long after the incident when he was being treated at the hospital. Jussie's people have told TMZ that he kept the rope to preserve the evidence.
Oh, okay. I keep the rope to preserve the evidence. Why do you have it around your neck? What are we going to hear about? I mean, this would be interesting. Police are not going to tell us, of course, but it'll be important when we hear about what, if anything, was found on the testing of his clothes. Was there a chemical found on his clothes, as he alleged, bleach or some other chemical that was splashed on him in addition to the noose, in addition to the attack?
And remember the surveillance video they have of him. He's on camera, then he's off camera for a minute, then comes back on in a minute and has this clothing line rope around his neck. Could it happen? And I mean, I don't know. Guess so.
That's possible.
It is possible. I mean, it is a minute.
It's possible. I mean, if this attack occurred, it's a terrible thing. Are there people out there that are hateful and ignorant and violent? Sure there are.
Ooh.
Does what we know to be true at this point and what's been reported, I'm sure Chicago police detectives know a lot more than we do, does that give you more or less confidence that this occurred?
Oh, and also before I forget, there was an envelope that was sent to the cast of Empire, and there was a white powder substance in it the FBI was investigating. It turned out to be aspirin.
I mean, there have been a lot of these incidents, like in places like college campuses where they're, you know, false flag operations.
Or somebody put a swastika on somebody's door and
looking for attention.
Looking for attention.
Yeah. Or trying to
catapult their career. I mean, look, his show on Saturday in West Hollywood is sold out. It wasn't the day before this event happened. Now it's sold out, and then there's a rally planned for him on Saturday morning with the LGBTQ community. And he's going to be honored. They're going to march in solidarity with him. We will have the audio for you on Monday.
Well, I want this case because of all of the attendant publicity and commentary. Chicago police shouldn't just let this case go, particularly with the resources that have been devoted. This either happened and the responsible parties need to be found and prosecuted, or it didn't happen and Jussie Smollett needs to be prosecuted.
Oh, if they find out that he filed a false police report, yeah. That's the very least they could do. And he should pay back the city for the money in overtime hours, because that's what people are getting, a lot of overtime right now, Dan, because of this case. Because it's a black eye for Chicago.
And because of the nature of this case, how politicized it is, how likely is it, if they don't think it happened, that they would just walk away from it, just let it be? And that's unacceptable. Jim in Willowbrook.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
I just had a question. Well, first off, I got a question and a comment. What does a redneck look like?
Redneck, good question here. Hold on a second. Let me get it.
The cable guy? Or what is it?
Redneck looks like a white man with scruff on his face, wearing a blue winter beanie, a blue zip-up sweatshirt with a hood, blue jeans that were too short, exposing thick gray hunting socks with camel-colored dress shoes. So now you know.
Well, as I told your screener, I was a police officer for 25 years. I hunt, I fish, I'm an outdoorsman. A lot of people consider me a redneck. I drive a truck, a semi for a living. I have a pickup truck.
Mm-hmm. Where were you?
I don't have a racist bone in my body, as far as my wife tells me.
Your wife would know.
But she, you know, if this is truly something that happened, great. Let's get this guy. Let's make sure that these two go to jail. But if it doesn't, the woman that made the comment about the witness, and then this Smollett guy—I don't even know who he is, to tell you the truth.
Nobody does.
They both need to go to jail.
Thanks.
And
it would
set a precedent for everybody else that wants to pull something like this, to show them that we're not putting up with this crap anymore.
Thank you for the call, Jim.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why she didn't use her name for TMZ.
Yeah.
And what redneck? Do you say camel dress shoes?
Camel color dress shoes.
Redneck wears dress shoes?
She's got a really good eye, this witness.
Rednecks don't wear dress shoes. They wear boots.
One resident of Streeterville, and I'm a resident of Streeterville,
yeah.
Tells
Dan, where were you Tuesday?
CWB Chicago. I know his story is odd, but I do believe him. There are a lot of robberies down there, the lower racker entrance. It's creepy even during the daytime. There are homeless people, creepy-looking people down there on a regular basis. Yeah, I'm down there all the time, too. I haven't seen that very much. But
never saw a homeless person down there.
But there are creepy people down there, homeless people, too. And then there are guys standing around with bleach and a noose waiting for Empire cast members to happen by. I don't know. Know about that. Sean in Elmwood Park.
Poppycock. 100% poppycock. And every day that goes by and the more they talk, the more it's proven. Listen to this description. Oh, I get it. It was the homophobic pro-Trump J. Crew mafia. They're vicious out on Lower Wacker. You absolute moronic liar. Not to mention, who leaves the noose around their neck? What are you walking around with it like it's an accessory? Insult me by putting something on my body. The first thing I do is tear it off. And you won't give the phone over to the coppers. Why? Because you're a liar, a fraud. Here's our only problem. We've got the Keystone Cops on it. What's their success rate in crimes? 0.08? My dog could do better at an algebra test than the Chicago detective solving crimes.
That's our
only problem.
All right. Thanks for the call, Sean. By the way, I mean, just in terms of, you know, putting something insulting on your body, who can beat you to the punch? You see these like 1987 rugby shirts from the Chess King this guy wears?
Yeah.
Sean from Elmwood.
Yeah.
Did you see my great aunt's petticoat that he had on last week in studio?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks
homeless. Boy, talk about a glass house he's living in.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.